Hello again, and welcome to another week of the Dakota Digest podcast. I'm Nate Weck, and thanks for joining me. Here is the top programming of South Dakota Public Broadcasting for the week ending January 15th. The big news this week was the start of the 2016 legislative session at the state capitol in Pierre. Governor Dennis Dugard kicked off the session on Tuesday with his annual State of the State address. One of the biggest topics, of course, was education. Some local lawmakers from both political parties say they support Governor Dennis Dugard's plan to increase education money. Two members of the Blue Ribbon Task Force say the governor is making funding schools a priority. As SDPB's Keely Boltino reports, both lawmakers still anticipate some changes to the governor's initial plan.
Governor Dennis Dugard wants to increase the sales tax by half of 1% to generate millions of dollars for education. He says schools can use the money to increase teacher pay, and the state can implement a mentoring program, among other tools. State Senator Deb Soholt co-chaired the Blue Ribbon Task Force.
I would just have to say that I'm extremely pleased and very excited about what the governor had to say in the State of the State about the Blue Ribbon Education Task Force work, but then also more specifically about the proposals that he's bringing forward that are just so important to assure that we have great teachers in the classroom for our kids.
Soholt says some of the plan's nuances are different than the Blue Ribbon Task Force recommendations. She says the plan is likely to change as lawmakers consider school funding. The governor's proposal shows a sales tax increase of 0.5 cents generates about $107 million. He wants $40 million of that to go to property tax relief. The millions left and $19 million from a pension levy produce a final number of more than $86 million for schools. Democratic State Senator Billy Sutton says the dollar amount should be higher.
And so at the end of the day, what that means for our plan is that it's going to cost $122.5 million. Again, that's $122.5 million is what we view the target as. And in order to fund that, we are proposing a 1 penny sales tax with removing the sales tax on food.
Sutton says that plan can generate up to $130 million, which allows them to include suggested programs for recruiting and retaining teachers. He says Democrats also want to change the student-to-staff ratio the governor's plan uses to allocate money to schools. He says that change specifically benefits small schools. Sutton and other Democrats say they agree with Republicans that the governor set the right tone by focusing on education funding.
The State of Judiciary address was this week as well. Chief Justice David Gilbertson says challenges in the state's judicial system are substantial, but not insurmountable. SDPB's Jennifer Jones has highlights from the speech.
Chief Justice David Gilbertson says the statewide network of drug and alcohol courts continues to grow and expand. He says nearly all larger towns in South Dakota have either a drug or alcohol court. He is requesting funding for a program in Brookings and other expansions.
I see two additional opportunities to keep addicts out of the penitentiary and restructure their lives so that they become useful citizens who pay taxes and support their families. First, I would like to see both alcohol and drug courts offered in each location where there is one or the other. You treat an alcoholic differently than you treat a drug addict.
Gilbertson would like more funding to accommodate more participants. He also wants to focus on fighting elder abuse in South Dakota. He says there are currently no mental health or mental anguish components in the state's abuse and neglect statutes. A Chief Justice bill is based on recommendations from a task force.
A few of the highlights of the recommendations are incorporating emotional and psychological abuse into our criminal abuse and neglect statutes. Recognizing the predominantly domestic or family nature of elder abuse, creating a civil right of action for elder abuse similar to our existing domestic protection laws. Employing a new prosecutor in the Office of Attorney General to specialize in prosecuting financial exploitation of elders in South Dakota. Creating a civil right of action against financial exploiters. And requiring background checks for proposed guardians and conservators, and generally prohibiting felons from serving in those positions.
Gilbertson says the changes won't completely solve the problem, but will make it more difficult to prey on vulnerable seniors.
Chairman Harold Frazier of the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe spoke before a joint session of the state legislature on Thursday. In his State of the Tribes address, he called for respect in order to work together. SDPB's Jennifer Jones has the scoop on this story as well.
Cheyenne River Sioux Tribal Chairman Harold Frazier says legislators need to consider how laws will impact Native people in South Dakota before they cast their votes. He says he wants to see more job creation on the state's reservations, but those areas need better infrastructure.
So we ask you, the state, to be our partner in economic development, because we all live together in South Dakota. When we create new jobs, everyone benefits.
Frazier says healthcare is also a priority among tribal members. He's glad state leaders want to expand Medicaid so that children and elders can have more access to care. He says tribal leaders are fighting a suicide epidemic.
We need to ensure that there's peer-to-peer counseling in this new plan. Many of our children don't want to open up to a non-Indian, to a stranger. Instead, they feel comfortable talking, like they said, with a friend, a grandma, or an auntie. So we should be allowed to bill and collect Medicaid, because we live in high poverty areas on all of our reservations.
Frazier says meth is one of the biggest problems tribes are facing today. He says leaders are looking at fighting the issue through the law, treatment, and prevention.
We are working to strengthen our courts, our police, and our laws. We are actively recruiting law-trained lawyers, law-trained prosecutors, court personnel. We're looking at creative ways, because of our low funding, to build and establish a strong police force. We're also working with other agencies to stop the dealers and the suppliers.
Frazier called on legislators to expand police training facilities.
A teacher and coach who spent most of his time running Mitchell High School's successful basketball program has died. Gary Munson died at home Tuesday morning. SDPB's Gary Allenbolt has more.
Gary Munson was a larger-than-life figure in his four decades on South Dakota's sidelines. He was a big man, known for his intensity and his success as coach of the Mitchell Colonels. A former player who became a friend of Munson's is Steve Culhane, now the business manager for the Mitchell School District.
I played for 2 years for Coach Munson when in his second and third year as head coach. And so I've known Gary for a long time, and he basically earned all the success that he had, because he outworked everybody over all the years that he coached.
Munson coached the boys' basketball team in Mitchell for 39 years, taking 34 of those teams to the state tournament. He won 9 state titles, plus 3 more as the girls' coach, when girls' high school basketball was played in the fall. Steve Culhane's son was a second-generation family member to wear a colonel's uniform.
One of the things that Gary was very good at was making everyone feel important. He seemed to have a great relationship with all his players.
The current executive director of the High School Activities Association, Wayne Kearney, officiated several games that Munson was involved in. Kearney says one of his first experiences came when Mitchell and Huron played a girls' game in the Corn Palace.
And I make a call, and I hear Gary from the sidelines. He says, "Geez, Wayne, this isn't a Class B game." And I kind of let it go, you know. And so during the next dead ball or timeout or whatever it was, I was standing next to Gary, and we're talking. I said, "Gary, I said, I'm sorry about that last call." I said, "But it must be Ruth's mistake at the Activities Association," I said, "because she only sent me one set of rule books, and I thought I was supposed to use them for all three classes."
Munson retired after the 2011-2012 season. His last Mitchell team advanced to the state championship game in Class AA. The Colonels lost to Sioux Falls O'Gorman. Munson died at age 72.
The first of 5 walls that together will create a veterans monument in the northern Black Hills town of Spearfish has been unveiled. SDPB's Jim Kent has the story.
The goal of the Spearfish Veterans Monument is to build a lasting tribute to the men and women of Spearfish who served in the U.S. military. Doug Henwood is on the committee that's creating the monument. He served for 23 years in the Air Force and is part of a family with a long history of military service. But Henwood says that's not unusual for residents of Spearfish or of South Dakota.
During the Second World War, there were 388 residents from this town serving. South Dakota, there was 49% of the male population in uniform at the close of the Second World War.
Henwood says the monument will consist of 5 walls representing the 5-pointed star on the American flag. But contrary to reports in the media, though all 5 branches of the military are represented in the names on each wall, Henwood says each wall isn't designated for a particular branch of service.
We're honoring the men and women, not the wars, not the conflicts. It's just the men and women, because a lot of these folks served 2-4 years of their life in the service, but never went into no combat zones or anything like that. Are they any less a veteran than those that serve? No. They're a veteran. They took the time out of their life to put a uniform on and serve this country, and that's what we're honoring.
The first 12-by-12-by-7-foot-high black granite wall contains 968 names dating back to the Spanish-American War. Henwood says each additional wall, costing $37,000 apiece, will be added as funds are donated for the project.
In 2010, during the night of July 29th and 30th, the Sioux Falls area saw unprecedented rainfall. Subsequent flooding damaged the property of Lincoln County landowners along the east side of South Dakota Highway 11. Five couples sued the state, saying that the highway blocked the flow of the Spring Creek tributary because 2 48-inch culverts were inadequate. At trial in the Second Circuit, the landowners prevailed, and the state appealed to the Supreme Court. Justices heard oral arguments in the case on Tuesday. SDPB's Victoria Wicks reports.
Attorney Gary Timson argues for the state. He says Highway 11 hasn't changed since it was built in 1949 on Rolling Prairie. What changed is urbanization, the sprawl around the city of Sioux Falls. In briefs filed with the court, Timson points out that urban construction creates more impermeable surfaces, and so there's more runoff. He argues it's up to the city to ensure that its growth doesn't cause flooding elsewhere.
The state can't just go in and start going downstream and dredging and digging channels and doing that sort of thing.
Timson says state law does not assign those responsibilities to the Department of Transportation.
DOT's not only responsibility, but authority to do anything ends at the highway right-of-way. The downstream and adjacent area watersheds are the subject of municipalities, counties, and local government.
But plaintiffs argued that the state took the land where the highway lies in inverse condemnation, and it has the responsibility to make sure that the few, the landowners, don't bear the expense of improvements that benefit the many. Plaintiff's attorney Mark Meyer-Henry says if the land had remained natural prairie rather than being crossed by a road, the damage would not have occurred.
So the natural condition is these houses would not have flooded. They build a road. I can call it a dike. They build a road. They have a duty. I think you would agree we have a duty to put culverts through there. This court has so held in other cases on this very issue. You have a duty to allow the natural drainage to go through.
Meyer-Henry says the state made a conscious decision to allow the land to flood rather than making additional repairs. Justices heard this part of the case for the first hour of its session and then heard arguments on whether the state should pay plaintiff's fees for attorneys and experts. The court will issue an opinion at a later date.
And that's going to do it for another week here at South Dakota Public Broadcasting. We have a special edition bonus story available on our website, courtesy of SDPB's Charles Michael Ray. Explorers in Jewel Cave are now preparing for their first major trip of 2016. This weekend, cavers will plan a 3-day adventure into the newly found southwest branch of Jewel. In June of 2014, explorers pushing a previously unchecked opening made a breakthrough into a huge new portion of the cave. Then 2015 saw the first discovery of lakes deep inside. SDPB's Charles Michael Ray went into Jewel to interview two generation cavers about the exploration that has taken place over the last several decades. It's a fantastic conversation. I encourage you all to visit us online at listen.sdpb.org to hear it. If you want additional programming information from South Dakota Public Broadcasting, visit our homepage at sdpb.org. You can also stay connected with us on social media by liking South Dakota Public Broadcasting on Facebook or by following our Twitter accounts. Our handles are at SODACPB, at SDPB News, and at SDPB Sports. I'm Nate Weck for South Dakota Public Broadcasting, and have a great day, everyone.